All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Strongpreneur Podcast. I'm excited today. This interview today has been, in my mind, months in the making. I'm with two guys who are doing some kick-ass things in the painting industry, and I thought that it would be great to bring Scott Burt and Todd Pudvar on the show today to talk to you about what they're doing to help increase the level of craftsmanship and a bunch of other stuff within the painting industry. And some of the things we're going to talk about here today can definitely be applied to your industry if you're not in the painting industry. So guys, welcome to the podcast. How you doing today?
Great, Tom. Thanks for having us.
So where are you sitting right now? Where do you guys live?
We're in the Burlington, Vermont area out on the East Coast. And we are actually in one of our shops today, which is where we're usually found.
Awesome. And so you guys have an organization called Prep to Finish. Tell us about that. How did that start? Maybe give us a little background on that and each one of you a little bit of a bio for us.
Yeah, well, Prep to Finish evolved out of our residential paint company, Top Coat Finishes. We've been around for 20 plus years, working high-end residential finishes around Lake Champlain up here in Vermont. And Scott and I both come from a background of teaching. Scott taught English for 5 years, and I taught Spanish for about 22 years. And we met, actually, in adjoining classrooms. And Scott was starting this paint business and was looking for help. So while we were teaching, we were painting full-time, a lot of late nights. And that continued to grow and grow and grow. And we got back together in the paint industry about 7-8 years ago. He needed an operations manager, and I'd had enough with administration and schools and decided to go back into painting with Scott. And we decided that we couldn't find really good paint people out there, people that could really hone their craft or wanted to or had any kind of training whatsoever when we were looking for employees. And one day, just sitting around having a couple of cold beers, said, you know, we can do better than this. We can actually train people to do this. So we created the concept of Prep to Finish and targeted it towards high school students in vocational ed and got some industry backing behind us to go offer it for free to high school kids. And we're very warmly received by the building trades community and vocational schools here in Vermont. And from there, we've taken it to about 15 states now, and it's free to the schools. And we have some really good support from the industry, getting behind education. And now we actually have gone the next step to offer training to contractors all over the country that just want to improve their skills and hone the craft and learn about new technologies. So that's a 60-second version of it.
Awesome. Scott, you got anything to add to that?
Tom, it's a topic that could be a two-hour documentary. Todd's snapshot of it is pretty accurate. But, you know, we've Prep to Finish, just to clarify, is entering its sixth year. And, you know, we try to be smart and plan ahead just like you do and you advise your clients to, you know, where you have a five-year plan that turns into a 10-year plan that turns into sustainability. And, you know, we're really proud of what we've accomplished so far. And you know how it is when you hit one level, you never want to plateau. You just want to keep shooting to the next one. And, you know, right now that's our mission with Prep to Finish, is just to keep shooting it up.
So what would you say your big grand vision is as of now for this whole thing? Paint a picture for us.
The picture really is, you know, this isn't necessarily just a paint industry issue. This is an issue that I know that the building trades are facing, and everybody who basically is in small business, like all of us are. Labor force is the biggest concern, and there's two layers to that onion, basically, Tom, where you've got your younger generation that isn't coming in fast enough, and that's due to a whole bunch of failure within each industry not to create a sustainable model. You know, and there's you can drill into that quite far and figure out, you know, how this happened. We haven't created an image of work in the trades that is appealing. And so that's a big part of the vision, is to help change the perception of how people who work in the trades, whether it's painting or landscaping or whatever it is that you do, people who are out there getting things done in America can be proud of that and have it be a career opportunity that people want to consider. And that's quite a battle these days to get young people off their devices and off their games to actually think about the fact that if you work, you can still do really well. And a lot of people who need to consider that option are people who really don't want to go to college anyway. So to us, it's, you know, that's how Prep to Finish started. And to us, it's a slam dunk. You know, we see the hole and we got the ball. How come nobody's got the ball through the hoop yet? Well, let's get it there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the first layer of it. And the second is the existing workforce. And you'll appreciate this, Tom, because we actually listen to your podcast and, you know, we know that you look big picture like we do, and you look at statistics and what really history has shown is happening in all of our businesses. And the average age of a working person in our trade is over 50 years old right now. Mm-hmm. And probably not very different, you know, in other trades as well. We're an aging workforce. And so that's the other side of Prep to Finish's mission, is to get out there and help these guys who, okay, you're 52 years old right now, and depending on how smart you've been, you might work another 10, or you might work until the day you drop, but you got to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, training the existing workforce is the other side of what we do.
Well, that's cool. You know, the big reason that I had you on is I believe we are both after the same thing. And, you know, I always say I want to change the DNA of the contracting world, you know, how it's perceived, how contractors and tradespeople view themselves. I grew up, you know, maybe this is just my own head trash, but I grew up feeling like if you didn't go to college and have a white collar job, that you were a loser, you know. And I came from a family of tradespeople. So it's like, but unfortunately, most of the tradespeople in my life didn't make a lot of money. They were always on the hamster wheel. And so it wasn't attractive to me, you know? So I felt like I did everything I could to get out of the trades when I was growing up. And, lo and behold, here I am, you know, back at it. So you touched a little on why younger people aren't coming into the trades. Can you guys elaborate on that a little bit? Like, you're out there in these high schools, you're talking to people, you're all over the country doing your seminars and stuff. What do you see as like the main top couple reasons that, you know, younger people don't want to come into the trades?
Well, it's, I think one of the biggest things, Tom, is the conception of how it's being conveyed to people, that if you're blue collar, you are at a certain class level. And I think we got to get people out of that idea that we're all classes. You know, we're one people all together trying to figure this whole thing out. And, you know, doctors have to live in houses and people have to build their houses. And what that doctor does to help people is equally as important as what that contractor does to put him in a safe and secure home,
right,
for him and his family. And what we saw in high schools, especially in our industry, in the paint industry, there's no cool tools. There's no gadgets. When people think about paint, they think about brush and bucket. And what they're not aware of is all the new technologies that are out there, from things like dustless sanding to zero VOC paints to sprayers that can do the work of four guys in half the time and get you better results. Because it's just that old thing. Well, if you can't do this, well, why don't you just be the painter then?
Mm.
And, you know, you look at the carpenter business and building, they're only a little bit ahead of where paint was, because at least they have cool tools.
Yeah.
But we're in the tools, and these kids are doing HVAC. They're doing wind technology, solar technology. They're doing hydroponic growing for vegetables and organic stuff. These kids are on the current what's cool trend, and they don't know where paint fits in. You know, I always remember my buddies that got into plumbing were like, man, you should see the hole saws we have and all this kind of stuff. And I thought, my God, they actually have special saws. These guys got it dialed. and now I got sprayers that I could spray all the trim on your house, Tom, and then your Lamborghini the next day with the same sprayer.
Yeah.
These guys aren't aware. You know, we've gone into schools where kids look me dead in the eye and go, "We're really going to, you're going to let us pull the trigger on a sprayer?"
Mm.
Because they can't believe you actually spray indoors. You know, so we've gone into these houses. These kids are building these fantastic houses that they actually build right inside these big warehouses their schools have and roll them out on flatbeds and put them together. And we show up to spray the whole inside of the house, and they had no idea that this could happen. I had a student last year ask me if I built an 18-inch roller cover by gluing two nines together.
Wow.
He had never seen it, but he built an entire house. So that's where we realize there's a disconnect between what kids know is out there, what they're being exposed to, and where technology really is.
Mm-hmm.
We were fortunate that we've paired with a high school here in Vermont, right up the street, that's building a net zero home that will have no utility bills. The house runs itself, basically. And we went in and sprayed the whole house with the kids over a course of 2 days. And it was fantastic, Tom. These kids took to the technology like a duck to water. They just need to have it exposed to them. They need to see what's out there. And I think that's where we've been really enabled at doing that because of our backgrounds in teaching and just our passion for it. It's fun if you make it fun, you know?
Yeah. So let me ask you this. The young people, the millennials and younger, seem to get a bad rap. Like they don't want to work hard. They don't have a good work ethic and stuff. What's your take on that? What are you seeing as you're out there interacting with these guys and girls?
Tom, you know, you're hitting the question that's going to make all three of us, you, me, and Todd, sit here and go, "We're turning into those old men on the front porch saying, stay out of my yard." But yeah. The honest answer to your question really is, what this world has turned into, it doesn't matter if you're in your 40s or in your 20s, or, you know what, I've got a 10-year-old son who is coming into the same world.
Mm-hmm.
And what everything is, you know, the devices and all of the online stuff has accelerated the pace at which we live. You know, the quickness with which we can all attain information and get answers to things has created sort of an epidemic of short attention span.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what everybody in the world is battling for. And so how this relates to your question is that that's what the building trades, the industries that we're all in, are all trying to capture the attention span of a generation that has a short one.
Hmm.
And, you know, that it's almost, you know, turned into a little bit of a matrix where you have to figure out and actually put some thought into how to get people interested in things really, really fast, because things happen fast. So the minute anybody of any age, you know, whether it's our age or younger or older, the minute somebody gets bored with the idea of something, the idea is pretty much shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So avoiding that boredom is key. And what we have found, a big part of the solution to that is there has to be a technology component in anything that any of us are doing. There has to be a technology component. And that's whether you're a builder, remodeler, painter, landscaper, pool installer, whatever you do. The minute something seems like a ridiculous, monotonous, tedious task, it's going to turn people off. And that's what, you know, Todd and I are at the age where we were brought up old school. You do stuff by hand. You learn to use a screwdriver before you learn to use a drill.
Right.
You learn to use a brush before you use a sprayer. And it's, you know, it's a hammer and it's a nail gun if you're a carpenter. And so that's a tough thing for all of us to have to figure out. You know, personally, I can immerse myself in a repetitive task for days. I can fill nail holes for days, and you know what? It's easy, and I can make good money doing it. So that's half of the battle is, you know, communicating that to kids, to young people, and saying, you know what? You got to make money. You have to work for it. It doesn't come for free. If it came for free, it would have no value, and then it wouldn't be money.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of it is really just in every industry, young people need an honest, organic message like that, that it's difficult for, you know, the biggest entities in all of our industries are the manufacturers, and they're not spending time sending that message out. That's not their business.
Yep.
But those of us who use all of these things and need all of these things to do our jobs also need people who are willing to be a workforce. And so at the end of the day, it's all about raising levels of awareness and getting people to really think about what they're doing.
Really, it really sounds like, you know, when you're talking about incorporating the technology and, you know, some of that stuff into our businesses, it's really about going to them where they're at in the world they live in, instead of expecting them to come into ours.
Yeah. Oh, meet them right where they live, Tom.
Yeah, bingo.
Exactly.
Yeah, so, Todd. Yeah, go ahead, Todd.
Well, I was just going to add to what Scott said is we realized early on that technology was our buy-in with these kids.
Mm-hmm.
We made it as simple as the difference between the latex paint that you and I were told by our dads to go brush on that fence is now a paint that actually can eat odor out of a room and remove smell.
Yeah.
And that's where we got to reach the kids. We got to tell them things that are relevant and they're pertinent and they're interesting instead of just it's pain. You know, we teach guys in the field all the time about using LED lighting for their job site because of the benefit of the clarity of light and the fact you're not creating heat. And we're actually surprised that guys didn't think of all the aspects of why it was better. They're just hung up on one and wouldn't make the investment because they didn't know the full range of what they were getting.
Right.
The contractors and the kids are no different in that way. They're sharp. I mean, most of these kids can walk circles around us on our iPhones and our laptops and all that kind of stuff. But if you surprise them with information and technology that they weren't expecting, they're not the millennials that catch the bad rap. The kids that want to learn and run their own businesses and be successful, and we've had kids tell us, I want to run a business and retire at 50, and I look them in the eye and I wish them luck.
There you go, man. There you go.
But I love the energy, you know?
So let me ask you guys this. You've been doing this, what, 6 or 7 years now?
Yep. Six years, yep.
How have you guys changed over the last 6 to 7 years, just personally?
Personally, professionally, or personally?
Just, you know, in your own character since you've been doing this.
I think in any industry, the deeper that you go into the industry, I think the biggest thing personally that I have learned is patience. One thing that I've observed in my own personal life over the last several years is that a lot of us as entrepreneurs, which, you know, we both are, Todd and I, and you are, Tom, and probably all of your listeners are too, is we are bigger picture people. And when we get an idea, we don't just get the idea, but we get the way to do it. You know, one comes with the other when you're a bigger picture thinker. You get the idea and you also get the route to get there in your head at the same time. And when you're passionate like we all are, you tend to obsess in a good way, where you'll put your energy in something that you believe in and you know is going to work.
Yeah.
And you tend to become highly productive and highly efficient in your personal life, which I think is what's happened. I'll let Todd speak for himself on the question, but I know that's happened for both of us. And so the patience factor becomes huge, because a lot of the time the rest of the world isn't running at the same rate that you are on the concept.
Mm-hmm.
So your vision as an entrepreneur is a concept, you know, in a lot of cases, and certainly in the case of Prep to Finish, we find ourselves doing things that within our own industry haven't been done before. And we love the challenge of bringing something out that hasn't been brought out before. And those are most of the things that we do. And it takes a lot of energy, but it takes a lot of patience, because a lot of the times when entrepreneurial vision leads to concept delivery that's ahead of its time, you got to wait a little bit for people to process it, and to you got to learn how to help them process it. Mm-hmm. Well, at the same time, because of your belief system and your passion, you know that you have to get it out yourself, because your vision of it is the best vision of it. And before anybody else can figure out how to try to do something similar and package it to be, to look like yours and, you know, share a market with you. So it's a leadership thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you become a leader and a niche developer by doing that. And I'll let Todd answer it in his personal level as well.
Cool.
Yeah, Tom, for me, it was kind of funny. I've reflected on the changes I've seen in myself and in Scott, but when we started this, I was actively engaged as Scott's operations manager with six guys that reported to me every day, and I run a pretty tight ship. I've told people I am not a fun guy to work for, but you'll learn a lot and you'll make a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be everyone's best friend, but I have to be the best decision maker for them. And I have an obligation to Scott to make sure that we hit the biggest number we can hit every single time we step out of this building. So for me, I went from a guy that needed to see results, and I was focused primarily on the quality of the product we created. And because I was putting my, you know, my handshake and my name on this in place of Scott for him and for our business, and saying, this is what we will do. And now I've got six guys or six people that I have to get them to that level. Mm-hmm. So my focus was there. And I've noticed that my focus now, it's not on the results, it's on the outcome of the training. My focus is on your results. The people that come and take classes with us and learn and get trained by us, whether they're a 15-year-old sophomore or they're a 45-year-old paint contractor, my focus is on your results, because I want you to be the very best you can be at your game. So it became more personal for me now. I agree with Scott. I've developed way more patience than I used to have, Tom.
I love it.
High school students are sometimes easier than adults to teach. I will tell you that.
Yeah.
But they're both equally fun, you know, to see people light up when they figure out a concept or learn how to use a technique that they've been trying to get dialed in, and finally it all works. It's just, it's fun to see people grab onto technology and learning because they want to better what they're doing. It's not because somebody told them they had to do it. It's because it means something to them.
Well, what I love about this is anytime you have a big vision and a big goal and you're trying to have a big impact, it causes you to, you know, look at yourself and adapt and change and become a person who adds more value. And it sounds like you guys are doing that. So I have a question here. I have a handful of questions here I want to kind of get through, and I'm just curious, as you're out teaching, and we'll just, obviously we're talking about the painting industry right now. It's mainly where you guys are at. What would you say is the easiest skill to teach that you see people pick up, and what the hardest skill for people to pick up is? Just in all the trainings you guys done over the last 7 years, what jumps out at you as the easiest and the hard? What would you guys say?
Well, I guess for me, the easiest skill to teach someone is to have confidence in themselves. One of our catch lines we use with people is, it's paint, we can fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to let people know that, you know what, we've all made mistakes, but you have confidence in what you can do. It may not be the first time, but with practice, you will get it. It's about them not worrying about how other people see what they do, right, but that they understand what they're doing and that it means something to them.
All right, so they can, play loose and not be worried about making a mistake, and you find that's pretty easy to get through to them.
Yeah, yeah. You remind them that, you know, you're the painter here. You're going in and making something nice look better.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you're doing, you know. It's like my dad owns a pool company, and we put in pools and ponds, and you're showing up to make something look nicer for somebody. You're going to make something look beautiful.
Yeah.
And people want that. So the expectation's already there. You get to go deliver it. How cool is that?
What's the hardest skill?
I'm going to take that part, Tom.
All right.
I'll be the glass half empty guy. The hardest part of helping people to improve and educating, whether it's employees or fellow colleagues, whatever it is, the biggest battle that we all fight, and this is going to sound like something that you would say, the head trash factor, to us, it's the human nature side of it, where sometimes the biggest thing that gets in people's way is themselves. Mm-hmm. And that's usually a function of ego. And we, Todd and I, in our curriculum development and how we help people learn, you know, we have to do it fast. It's live and it's in person most of the time. And you need to see where people are at really quickly and help them get to where they need to be. And so the hardest thing, which is, we love the hardest things. This is not negative by any means. The biggest challenge that we love is helping people, leading people to the conclusion that they need to change the way they're doing things.
Yeah.
And that doesn't matter if you're, you know, raking out topsoil with a nice rake or painting or whatever it is that you do, leading people to the conclusion that as soon as you become complacent and set in your ways, you stagnate. You know, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Mm-hmm.
And like Todd mentioned earlier, one of the biggest ways, the most powerful ways that we have found to do that is by using technology to snap people out of that, you know, and the way that translates in our paint trainings is we'll get companies that come to train with us that are very successful, very, very, you know, top of the industry companies that are being led by the, you know, typical 50-year-old longest tenured painter on the crew who is also the most outdated and most reluctant to change. And helping people to realize the production differences, which translates to profit differences, between the way you're doing things and the way you should be doing things is the biggest challenge. And you know, we sort of bridge the gap where a lot of the, you know, marketing and sales consultants and organizations and stuff, you know, there's a lot of support on the business side that's very good, and a lot of it's like yours is certainly top of the barrel for the type of advice that you do to help educate people and improve. You know, it's a lot of being open-minded to change.
Well, you know, you guys are on the fulfillment side of things. You know, like if we can sell and we can market and sell all day and get people to pay higher prices and do all that stuff, but if we don't come through on the other end and deliver, you know, we're not going to be in business long. So I love the fact that you guys are kind of rounding out the thing here, and I know that's why we've always had a synergy. So let me walk us through some of your programs in the next minute or two, a couple minutes here, just kind of a quick overview of what you got out there, what you're doing, what's available to people. If somebody's listening to this, who's a painting contractor and they're like, man, I could use some help on this side. You know, what do you guys offer? What's that look like?
There's basically three prongs on it right now, Tom. The technical students, the high schools, technical programs around the country that have solid building trades programs, but that are needing and looking for more specialized trade training, like the paint training that we offer in technical schools. That's prong number one. Number two is contractors. And that is an area of particular concern right now because the young people aren't coming in as fast as everybody wants them to. You would know better than I the statistics of how many people every day are retiring versus how many people are deciding to start to work.
Yeah.
It's a pretty lopsided equation. So we're putting a lot of resources into helping the existing workforce to continue. And that's what our contractor training is all about. And we recently launched an online training program, literally put online for the first time the ability for the existing workforce of contractors in our industry, which is paint, to train themselves on more current technologies, but also to get their employees, their crews trained. And so that is called PainterTrainer.com. And we offer online courses that way that, you know, ultimately are going to cover a lot of areas, you know, down to getting to make sure that the estimate that was given is actually matched by the production that's happening in the field is a critical area where we sort of, the synergy that you referred to between, you know, the type of expertise that you offer and how it translates to what we offer. You know, there's basically two sides in all of our businesses in any industry: get jobs and get jobs done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you do a really great job of helping guys get the jobs year after year, and it's our responsibility to help support guys to get jobs done.
Love it.
If I may add to that, Tom, one of the unique features of the three-pronged approach that Scott just mentioned is the courses that we offer, that we teach, are across the board. So we teach airless air-assisted spraying, for example, where we take you through the entire machine so you understand the technology, how to safely prepare yourself, and how to use the machine and then care for it, for example. We teach that on one level to the kids in the tech schools, the vocational schools, that will one day maybe need to know that skill to help their career along.
Right.
As well as at the same time, we're teaching this to contractors in the field that have these machines and have no idea how to make it work the way it should work. So they're losing money every day by owning a piece of technology that they've never been trained on. And now, like Scott said, we've taken that idea and put it into an online format where you sign up for a class and you get 8 weeks of implementation support from us online, as well as video lessons that take you basically start to finish or soup to nuts through the whole, your spray program or your sanding technology programs, or how to shape a proper crew for your paint business to be efficient. So we're trying to reach every single avenue we can get to, Tom, to try to help people, you know, better what they're doing, make them more efficient and more profitable every single day.
Awesome. What was the third prong? You said high school trades, well, contractors. What's the third?
Well, the third prong is kind of a stem off the contractor. Now, the guys that can't get to us, can't get up to Vermont to spend two or three days with us at the shop, can now go to the online training center.
So it's the online.
PainterTrainer.com, and they can do it at their own leisure, their own convenience, their own pace, while at the same time they can be contacting us through our interactive site to get answers literally on the job site if they need it.
Awesome.
For whatever the course may be covering, you know?
Good deal. All right. Yeah,
we're trying to put ourselves in their environment instead of bringing them to ours.
Awesome. But in addition to that, I know you guys, if a company is listening to this, you know, they can send people to you, or you can fly out to them
and
do a workshop and stuff like that too, right? You're all good with that?
Yes, both options.
All right, cool.
Both options. We have a full facility here in Vermont with a spray shop and a production shop.
Okay. So let me ask you this. I got just a couple more questions. We'll wrap this up here. I talk a lot about, I have some pretty strong opinions of my own, which you guys know. I'm curious what you guys believe. I mean, you guys are in the field, you're working with these people, you guys are master craftsmen, so you get this. So I feel great asking you guys this question. Whatever comes out of your mouth, I would urge the listeners to take to heart. What would you say, and this could be across any trade, it doesn't have to be just painting, what would you say the top trait of a great foreman is, in your opinion?
I'll start by saying the very first thing is patience and understanding, because you have to work as a team. You're still all human. After looking at patience and understanding, it's level of knowledge and skill that you bring to the game.
Okay. And I'm going to add to that, Tom. Todd just hit the nail on the head from the management side, and management is a big weakness we observe in a lot of small businesses across all the industries. People, management training is something that needs to happen. We probably won't have time in our course of events to create what needs to be done to create managers, but we do touch on a lot of leadership training. And the biggest trait, you know, as the owner of a company myself, what I'm looking for in a manager is a guy or gal that isn't afraid to enforce the company standard. Mm-hmm. Every company has its own standard, and that's a real, real big deal to us and our company. We've got a vision. We've got a standard. What we go out and sell to our customers has to be delivered at the standard that we promise. And that's where, you know, infrastructure comes into play, because the manager of your crew has to take the company's best interests to heart every day, even if it's going to piss people off.
Yep.
And, you know, I wouldn't say this on any show, but I know I can say it on yours because you're into reality programming. We have something in Prep to Finish that we teach that's called Give a Shit Factor.
Yep.
And, you know, we literally, the acronym is GAS Factor. And so your manager, your leadership within your company has to have a huge give a shit factor. But when they're enforcing the company line and what's in the best interest of the sustainable health of the company, they have to kind of not give a shit what the crew thinks.
Mm-hmm.
Because the crew, your field-based crew, will tell you a million reasons why what was estimated and what's been planned to happen in the field isn't possible. And, you know, we talked about millennials earlier in the broadcast, and it's not necessarily an age-based thing. I mean,
yeah,
to be honest with you, we've had bigger challenges motivating people who are 35 years old than people who are 22 years old.
Yep.
By far.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think leadership in all of our small companies, you've got to have leadership and management in place that gives a shit about the company. And you absolutely have to care about your workforce. You have to take their safety and their security and employment very, very seriously in any industry. But, you know, they can't run the company.
They have to remember they can't do it alone either, Tom.
Yep. All right. So let me ask you guys this. That was good stuff. I appreciate that. So I know we got a lot of guys, a lot of people listening to this that own the business, do the sales, do the estimating and things like that. Maybe they don't work in the field anymore. From your point of view, how are those owners / salespeople / estimators, how are they hosing their people in the field on a regular basis? What do you guys see? How do they really stick it to them without maybe being intentional about it?
I'm not sure what you mean. How owners would stick it to workforce?
Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, just in the estimating and the sales process, what are some things that maybe salespeople and estimators do that unintentionally really make life hard for their guys in the field?
Okay, that clarifies. That's
a better way to ask it, huh? Sorry about that.
Yeah. That's more specific.
Yeah.
I think what you're referring to is generally mistakes that happen at the estimating stage. And I know that you do a great job of helping people to understand like the whole marketing and sales funnel and how a lead actually gets to be a lead in your company and, you know, what everything that happens before you land out there on the estimate looking at the job. So the question that you're asking is specifically at the point of estimate is where the give a shit factor kicks in for the production staff, because the jobs generally in a healthy company have to be delivered by, you know, the field staff,
mm-hmm,
as estimated or better. And that puts the estimator in an awkward position. And in a lot of cases, in my case at Topco Finishes as the owner would be this, you know, most of the time it's going to be me signing off on estimates, because I'm a small enough company that I don't designate off my estimating. And so when I estimate a job, a lot of the times I have to literally think in terms of, okay, if I have the ability for two crews, which crew do I see doing this job? How are they going to do it? And how do I price it for that crew to do it? And mistake can happen right there because, you know, depending on the, you know, the closing ratio of the salesperson in play and the estimator, and then a lot of times we all wear the same hat, you know, owner, estimator, sales, marketing, you know, bottle washer. At the point of estimate, everything has to be taken into consideration. So if things are missed at the estimate and the job is sold with a particular scope of work and the field staff, you know, shows up to do the work, and now that's not a one coat situation, that's a three coat situation. Or that's not 1 yard of topsoil, that's 40 yards of topsoil. It is where initially a flag should come up. And, you know, that's where accuracy becomes really important. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about things happen fast in our world today, but there's some things that have to happen in real time, and estimating is one of those things that has to happen where you slow down for a minute, shut everything off, and look at what's in front of you because you're putting a number on something that you get to stand behind.
Right.
So, yeah, you're, you know, it seems like most of the time, Tom, people don't mess up on an estimate and go really high and get the job. They go really low and get the job.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's... You know, I find that a lot of guys don't take the time to really talk through expectations with the customer and communicate those expectations with the crew, and then a real clear scope and things like that. So,
well, I think you just hit it, Tom, with the clear scope. One thing I would add to that is a lot of times people go in to estimate a job. People we've talked to, contractors, I know, I'm sure Scott and I have both done this, is we go in and we're listening to the homeowner address what they believe the problem to be and what they'd like done, and we focus so much on the solution that we might miss some of the other problems that exist.
Right.
And as soon as you miss those problems, you're going backwards.
Yep.
And now you're trying to do punch list and stuff, and you're certainly losing the interest and trust of your client at that point. So people don't also take time to consider how much damage control they need to do and how they address things.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, we pride ourselves on go in real slow and careful for the estimate. We can bowl through everything we need to at the end, but let's tiptoe through the estimate.
You know, the longer I've been out of the field, the faster of a painter I am.
yeah. It's
I used to do a house like that by myself in a day and a half. You know.
Yeah, that's it. That's why earlier when I said we're turning into the guys on the front porch telling the kids to get off our lawn.
Yeah, back in the day. So, all right. Well, last question for you, and then I'm going to ask you. You can share how people can reach you guys and stuff. My last question is this: you get to wave a magic wand over all the trades. What do you fix? You get one thing to pick.
Well, I'll give my answer first, and then I'll let Todd answer. In my opinion, in the building trade, I'll be very frank. I think the demographic that needs the most fixing would be the architects, because they're driving a lot of the decisions that are being made about building materials and building process, and a lot of the times the architects are the least educated of the entire bunch in the whole labor force chain. And we all deal with the repercussions of what the architect said. So I think that if I could wave a magic wand, I don't know that I want to be an architect. I think I'd become bored with that fairly quick, although they do deal in the initial slice of the pie on projects. They're right there when the pie comes out of the oven.
Yep.
But, you know, I think that would be the area where I would start. And, you know, I think every industry, regardless of your trade, everybody's got a whole bunch of stories that they've endured about what the architect said.
Okay.
So I think that'd be where I would want to change.
All right. How about you, Todd?
I'd approach it a little bit differently, I think, in the sense that I would like to wave a magic wand and turn hands-on labor or manual labor back to the term craftsmanship and go back to giving a shit about the outcome of your work and taking pride in what you do. And I think it covers every trade out there. We need to remind people that this is a skill, it's a trade, it's a craft that you learn and you hone. It's not something you can just dial up. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to change people's perspective, I think, Tom.
Awesome. That's good stuff. So for somebody who's listening to this, they want to learn more about your stuff, they want to catch you online or other places, how do they do that? How do they reach out to you guys if they want to get in touch?
The very first place I'd go is to preptofinish.com, to our website. Mm-hmm. There you can link to our YouTube channel, Facebook, Twitter, all the social media little squares on your webpage. But you can also now go to paintertrainer.com to see what online classes we're offering. Going back to preptofinish.com, it's a site that's very interactive for people. They can check out videos of vocational schools. So if you're a director of a tech center out there and you're wondering how to get us to your school for free, go check it out, get in touch with us there. But contractors can look at all the listings of classes we offer in person too, Tom.
Good stuff. That's awesome. Well, guys, I appreciate you hanging with us today. I'll put those links in our show notes, and I'm excited for the people in the contracting world to learn more about you guys. And I encourage them highly to get in touch, because you guys are doing some great stuff, helping a lot of people. And you've stepped up. You saw a need, you've stepped up, and you're filling that gap. So I wanted to thank you guys for that.
Well, thank you, Tom. We appreciate your time and your efforts and all the work you're doing out there to promote good business.
Good stuff, guys. Well, again, I appreciate it. And we will talk to you guys soon.
All right, Tom. Thank you. Take care.
Okay.